Opioid-related deaths in the state are a real and growing problem. This hour, the push for so-called harm reduction legislation. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In the first half hour, we'll hear from the executive director of the Iowa Harm Reduction Coalition about the benefits of needle exchange programs, misconceptions about them and their effectiveness, and about the push for legislation to legalize needle exchange services. Then we'll get an update on Iowa's controversial state voter ID law, and then check in with a few other states about news surrounding their voting laws. That's all coming up. First, this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, this half hour, we want to look at the response to the real and growing problem of opioid-related deaths in our state. In just a moment, we'll hear from the executive director of the Iowa Harm Reduction Coalition and also from a state representative about needle exchange programs, misconceptions about them and their effectiveness, and about the push for legislation to help those addicted to opioids. Let's start with IPR's own Katerina Sestarek to get us up to speed. She's done a lot of reporting on this topic. Hello, Katerina.
Hi, Ben.
So needle exchange programs that have been used in other states to prevent the spread of infectious diseases and help drug users into treatment, they exist in Iowa, but they are illegal?
Correct.
They exist underground. How does that work?
Some groups are already operating needle exchange programs, even though they're illegal, in a few cities in Iowa. Basically, they get funding from donations and from some outside sort of nonprofit agencies that support needle exchange programs. They buy needles, syringes, other supplies that drug users might need to stay safe and clean. Clean from diseases, and so then they go out and distribute those to people, usually just from the backs of cars in different cities across Iowa.
Mm-hmm. How do the drug users know where to find them?
They do a lot of sort of just on-the-ground work. It's kind of a word-of-mouth thing where, you know, once some clients start coming to them, they sort of pass the word around and start trusting them more, and then build up a clientele that way.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose a certain degree of turning a blind eye by the authorities, by the police?
I think it varies from city to city what the police sort of think of these programs. So I think we'll still have to wait and see, you know, if there are any sort of repercussions from law enforcement.
Mm-hmm. Now, there were moves to legalize needle exchange programs for people injecting drugs in the last legislative session. Tell us what happened.
Right. So advocates for the legalization of these needle exchanges were visiting with lawmakers and trying to change some of their minds about these programs. And so there was a bill. It would have decriminalized the distribution of needles for drug use when they're given out through an approved needle exchange program. And so that bill was ultimately passed out of the Senate Judiciary Committee with bipartisan support. After that, though, it was never taken up on the full Senate floor, and it didn't move any further during the session.
Mm-hmm. We'll hear in depth from the executive director of the Iowa Harm Reduction Coalition in just a moment, but how would you summarize the chief arguments for legalizing needle exchange? It's also about more than just exchanging needles, right?
Right. Needle exchange programs can provide a lot of other services to drug users, and these are programs that have been running for many years in other states, so there's a lot of research that shows that they do work. And so some of the other services is they can help link drug users to addiction treatment, provide disease testing, and connect them to housing for people who need it. They can also give out naloxone, a drug that can stop an opioid overdose.
Mm-hmm. And those against legalizing needle exchanges, what do they say?
Well, people who are against needle exchanges, a lot of them think that the programs will encourage more drug use.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What else has been happening in the legislature concerning the opioid epidemic?
Steps were taken this session to address sort of the prescription opioid side of this. So there was a bill that made it mandatory to only provide electronic prescriptions rather than handwritten ones, because those can be easy to alter if someone were seeking extra opioid medication. They also made it mandatory to use the prescription monitoring program, which tracks what doctors are prescribing opioids and how many and who's obtaining them. And that can sort of be used to help find people who might be addicted to opioids, prescription opioids. And so some harm reduction and needle exchange advocates have said that since that is only focused on the prescription pill side of things, it's sort of leaving out protections for people who are already, you know, using street drugs and are already injecting drugs like heroin.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much for bringing us up to speed. IPR reporter Katarina Sestarek.
Thanks, Ben.
If you've just joined us, we're looking at the response to the real and growing problem of opioid-related deaths in our state here on River to River. I'm Ben Kiefer. Let's talk now with Sarah Ziegenhorn. She's the Iowa Harm Reduction Coalition Executive Director. Sarah, welcome to our studio.
Thanks so much, Ben. Good to be here.
Tell us about this organization. Many are unacquainted with it. What do you do? Who are you? What are your goals?
Sure. So the Iowa Harm Reduction Coalition is a nonprofit that's about 2 years old. We work in Des Moines, Iowa City, and Cedar Rapids. We're an advocacy and education organization, but we're also a direct service agency for people who use drugs. And so the work that we do right now when it comes to providing direct services is really about setting the stage for the creation of a needle exchange program. So we provide comprehensive health care and social services for people who use drugs just without the needles and syringes.
How do you do that? Where do you do that?
Sure. So our program uses a model that's been commonly used in states across the country, in some states for as long as 3 decades. And so we have an office location based in Cedar Rapids, but a lot of our work, our motto is to meet people where they're at. And so that means oftentimes literally meeting people in the communities where they spend their time working or socializing. So that might be in a park, it might be in their home, it might be in a local bar or restaurant. It could be in somewhere as simple as a parking lot. But the idea is to engage with people and provide services in places that are convenient and don't require people to jump through significant hoops.
Right. And I imagine gaining trust is a big part of your challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that we do is engage a network of volunteers and our staff who are people who have direct experience with using drugs, particularly IV, heroin, and methamphetamine. Because once you have people who you're working with who are really deeply embedded in the community, it makes building trust a lot easier if it already is there.
Mm-hmm. So talk about the change you feel is needed legislatively here in Iowa to further your aims.
Sure. So right now, we know that Iowa has seen over a decade worth of increase in rates of hepatitis C. And so hepatitis C is not something that's commonly known to many people, but it's the leading infectious disease killer in the United States. It kills more people than the next 60 leading infectious diseases combined. And Iowa is no exception. We also know that CDC warned Iowa last November and said, given the rise in overdose deaths and hepatitis C, Iowa has data that suggests we're on the verge of an HIV outbreak because of the opioid crisis. So by enacting a needle exchange program, Iowa would be able to reverse the trend in an increasing rate of hepatitis C infections, but also prevent an HIV outbreak.
Mm-hmm. I talked with Katarina Sestarek a moment ago about underground needle exchanges. What can you say about those?
Sure. So we know that these programs are operating currently across the state in at least 4 cities. What we also know is that the Iowa Department of Public Health plans to release new data in the next month that indicates that hepatitis C rates have decreased last year in Iowa for the first time in many years, which they suggest may be due to the work of those programs. So we know they're there, and we know that they are effectively saving people's lives.
Mm-hmm. And the Iowa Harm Reduction Coalition is involved with those, connected with those?
Sure. So we work with those folks as our partners, but obviously we don't engage in those type of services.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about your work last session at the Iowa legislature. What were you driving for? What was the response?
Sure. So primarily what we wanted to do was to change Iowa's drug paraphernalia statute to allow for the distribution of hypodermic needles or syringes through an authorized syringe exchange program. So that doesn't mean that anybody could just be walking around on the street with syringes, but you could possess them if you were a participant in an authorized program. And so when you talk about these needle exchange programs, often people have a knee-jerk reaction that says, that sounds crazy. That's enabling drug use. But what we found is that because of the work that's been going on in other states for several decades, people, in fact, typically have no problem with the programs. So many legislators, as many as 45 in the Iowa Senate, said, I've personally got no problem with these programs, but I think my colleagues may. So I think that is just a sign that people's perceptions and attitudes around drug use have evolved over the past several decades, but we socially think that our peers may not have evolved their attitudes as well.
And you have had discussions with, I assume, many legislators.
Sure. Yep.
Have you changed minds, you feel?
Yeah, I think that there's always a process of education. Legislators are really overwhelmed with many responsibilities which they need to learn and issues which they need to get up to speed and learn on. And so I think many of our legislators are reasonable and willing to look at evidence and data and revise their beliefs and ideas when they hear from experts who are able to share good research from them.
Mm-hmm. So by enabling needle exchange services. I know a key thing here is you say it's about much more than just exchanging needles, not sharing needles, not transmitting diseases like hepatitis C. What else could take place should this be legalized as it is in other states?
Sure. So Katarina has a really good summary of what the programs do. But one thing that I find particularly compelling in the midst of the current opioid overdose crisis is that these programs offer an opportunity to link and connect directly with people who are actively using heroin and other opioids. And so the programs distribute naloxone, which is the reversal antagonist of opioids that can rescue someone from an overdose. In our particular program, we've seen that we do distribute naloxone currently to people who use drugs who might participate in a needle exchange program. And we've seen that we've had 258 people report that they've saved someone's life with that medication just in the past year.
If you just joined us, Sarah Ziegenhorn is my guest at the moment, Iowa Harm Reduction Coalition Executive Director, talking about responses to reduce harm, as is indicated in the name, to the real and growing problem of opioid-related deaths in the state, the transmission of diseases like hepatitis C. If you have a connection here, you'd like to share an experience or have a question for Sarah, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org is our email. Sarah, I wonder, do you have a personal connection with this issue? What makes you so passionate about it?
Sure. So before I started this organization, I was living and working in Washington, D.C., and moved back to Iowa, my home state, in 2015. But I had been working in governmental public health and participating in a program very much like a needle exchange, or very much like ours, but it was a needle exchange program, and found that this model was so effective and at promoting positive change in people's lives, and saw firsthand how many people come into a needle exchange program to access syringes, but over the course of several months, maybe several years of participating, they often access treatment and reduce their drug use and make very significant changes in their health and well-being. So I was very moved from that experience as a service provider to desire to implement a similar program here to benefit our communities.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell us about one example, one story that you worked with personally?
Yeah. I'll tell you about a gentleman who, when I first met him, was really, really resistant to engaging with any person in a service provider role, especially in a hospital or a health department. He was someone who you might hear about and say is a bad patient. He would go to the emergency department regularly. He might at certain times be violent towards healthcare providers. So he was a really difficult person to work with. But over the course of several months, he began to receive naloxone, and he saved the lives of over 20 people in his community and his network of friends. And he began to change his attitude in talking about himself. And he would start to say things like, my life matters, it's important for me to get better because I can be valuable and of service in my community. And so that change in how he thought about himself over the next year led him to a place where he sought treatment with the assistance of his syringe exchange program, and where he now today is working, he's taking care of his family, he's what we many people might say a productive member of society, mm-hmm. but he is able to have meaningful relationships and be healthy and safe and alive because of that supportive relationship of his harm reduction program.
Do you find it one of the great challenges here, Sarah, is changing the idea of, you know, when we say drug addict or injection drug user, an image will pop into each of our minds, right? Imagine your image is now much different based on your experience than an average Iowan. Is changing that image of who is an opioid user, who injects drugs and so forth, because we know from past conversations on this and other shows that you can have that leap between a prescription pill to injecting drugs, right? And this is a continuum. These are the same people who started taking prescription drugs as later came to inject them, right?
Yeah. And so in many cases, we do see the people who participate in our harm reduction programs around the state come from many very different life backgrounds. Some are relatively wealthy folks. Some are people who've been living outside for many years. Some are people who identify as white. Some are people of color. Some are people in their teens. Some are people in their 50s. It really is an equal opportunity to become an IV drug user.
Right. And I know it sounds funny, but I think you're accurate there. So when we go to work, when we hang out with people, friends, we might not know that they're drug users in this way. Do people tend to hide it?
Yeah, using drugs is something that is deeply, deeply stigmatized in our world. And it is no shock to say that to anyone because
right.
we know that. But we know that because drug use is so intensely stigmatized that people often are very private about their use. And that's when people are most likely to die of an overdose, is when their use is secret and when they use in spaces where no one who is in their life and who loves them might be available to administer naloxone or help them connect with treatment services.
Sarah Zinghorn is with us, Iowa Harm Reduction Coalition Executive Director. Let's also talk before the half hour ends with Representative Bob Kresig. He's a Democrat who resides in Cedar Falls, I believe. Representative Kresig, welcome to the program.
Yes, thanks, Ben. I appreciate being asked to be on the show today.
Great to have you on. So, tell us about your involvement here. What type of harm reduction legislation do you favor?
Well, this last session, I co-sponsored House File 2207, which was the needle exchange bill. The bill itself was referred to the Judiciary Committee, but no subcommittee was held. Now that's in the House. The Senate had one out of committee that went forward. But it didn't get to the floor for a vote and didn't make the funnel. And so, you know, based on my experiences, particularly talking with people like the professionals that you've had on today, you know, you sit down and you listen to them and they share the stories that they're facing with people, you know, people that are addicted. The needle exchange program would have been something that could have really provided a great benefit to Iowans here in this state. But sadly, it did not survive the funnel and nothing was done this year. So very frustrating.
Yeah. Why don't you think it survived the funnel? Why wasn't there enough pressure to move it along?
Well, you know, my sense to that is, and there were people down there talking to us. We actually had some law enforcement from North Carolina travel from North Carolina to Iowa to share their stories of the benefits of this program. We had people, Republicans and Democrats, in there. But for some reason, I just don't know if they're listening. Maybe their priorities are set on other things. But it's clearly costing Iowans money to, you know, based on your insurance premiums going up because of this hepatitis C issue, and Medicaid. We're seeing some significant costs coming through Medicaid. So I think it's a key issue. Hopefully, with the next session coming up in 2019, we'll be able to move this forward and give this as a tool to help people that are suffering with addiction, particularly with opioids and other things.
Mm-hmm. Is the argument the hardest argument for you to counter the one that says, hey, we're enabling drug use, we're encouraging drug use by handing out drug paraphernalia?
Yeah, and I've heard that argument from others, and it just doesn't survive the discussion, because all they have to do is listen to the experts in the world that say this would be a way that we could deal with the overall epidemics of drug addiction and those things.
Mm-hmm. Representative Kresik, you're a Democrat. Is this, or to what degree is this, a partisan issue?
Well, I think the partisan piece is that the Republicans had complete control of the governor's office, the Senate, and the House. And I'm sure they had their priorities, and this probably wasn't one of them. Where we had the opportunity to visit with experts in the field, and Representative Einhardt, he also played a major role in that too. But I just don't get a sense that they were listening.
Mm-hmm. Not listening for what reason?
Well, I think some of their priorities may have just been focused away from having this as one issue that they were going to spend time on.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I can't answer their specific reasons why they didn't go it forward.
Right.
I can only share what I think it was, and that's my perspective.
Representative,
go ahead.
In the final minute that we have, sorry to cut you off there, we have a minute left. Give us the outlook you have for the next legislative session 2019 on this issue.
Well, part of it's going to determine who's in charge, I think. But hopefully, I know the Senate listened to this issue, the House didn't, so hopefully this coming session they do, and we can make sure that people that are addicted to drugs can get help.
Okay, so in a word, it depends on who's in charge, meaning if one of the chambers goes back to the Democrats, you see a higher likelihood?
I think that the possibility of that is pretty significant, and I'm hopeful that we can come together and work on this issue, no matter who's in charge, and solve this problem.
Sarah Ziegenhorn, you have a few seconds here before we have to say goodbye. What thoughts you want to leave us with?
I'm very hopeful for this legislation to legalize syringe exchange programs moving forward during the next legislative session. I think really there's broad support on both sides of the aisle, and people know that paying for the treatment for hepatitis C related to IV drug use is decimating our state budget. Our legislators are smart, and they know that we need to enact these programs to reduce the costs to Iowa Medicaid and to our private insurance payers.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Sarah Ziegenhorn, Iowa Harm Reduction Coalition Executive Director. Representative Bob Kresik, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up in just a moment, we'll talk about Iowa's controversial state or voter ID law and check in with some other states. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.